Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to help keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Rich.
Sorry to turn my back on you.
Hi, my name is Rich. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Rich.
And congratulations for you taking your chips. That's awesome. We call it birthdays here. My wife is here, and my aunt Regina is here. And we call them birthdays because really our life really began over again. So I'm glad I don't have to talk for the whole 40 minutes if it doesn't take 40 minutes to deliver my message. So basically, I came in here. I wasn't exactly a vision for you. I was the epitome of incomprehensible, demoralized blob of self-pity and misery. Then I decided to pick a sponsor and work the steps and take direction, get closer to God, and I got abstinent, and that's it. Thank you very much. We're done. No, what caught my eye was the 15 questions. Ooh. Everyone knows these, right? I love this test. And do you eat when you're not hungry? Yep. Do you go on eating binges with no apparent reason? Yes. Do you have feelings of guilt and remorse over overeating? You betcha. Do you give too much time and thought to food? Do you look forward with pleasure and anticipation to the time when you can eat alone? Mm-hmm. Don't tell anybody that. Do you plan secret binges ahead of time? Do you eat sensibly before others and make up for it alone? Is your weight affecting the way... You know what? I took this at the Orange County Fair. Back in the 1990s, I took this test. And I passed with flying colors. Or did I fail? I really don't know. But they were all in one column, and they were all in the affirmative column. And that's when I realized, uh-oh, maybe I'm a little different about this, and this food thing is a little different. And that was my first exposure to the 12 steps. I didn't know, I had heard of 12-step programs, I didn't know what they were all about. Now, I'm going to share very briefly that I had other substances in my life and other problems in my life, and it's part of my story. The big book talks about, in their stories, they have cross-addictive things. But I was, it turns out I also belonged in our parent organization. And when I went to the meeting and the book said Alcoholics Anonymous, I go, what has this got to do with anything? And I pretty much made skid marks in the parking lot, got the heck out of there. But the brief time that I was there, I realized, wow, I really felt at home because I heard the stories. I heard people sharing about things that I truly related to and I had never heard anywhere else before. And what really bowled me over was the honesty and how people talked so openly about things that I had been keeping secret and quiet and didn't understand myself. So that was a big revelation for me. So as I went through life hitting bottom in my other addictions, I had hit a very pitiful time in my life in December of 1993, and I called a hotline and they said, one of only three things will happen to you if you don't get help. And one is you're going to die. Two, you'll end up in jail. And three, you'll end up in an institution with no brains. One of those three things are definitely going to happen to you. And I started bawling like a baby. And I realized she was right. So I got to a meeting. And I was back in 12 steps. And I have been clean and sober for 18 years. Plus now, and at that time I also recommitted to OA with a whole new understanding of what the steps were about. And I started getting abstinent, and I was going to both meetings, and things were working really well for me. But what happened was, even in my sobriety, what happened is I kind of got a little disenchanted with OA for various reasons, and also I started rationalizing that it would be okay that if I pretty much eat the way I want to eat. So I started once again getting on the yo-yo of life, that we have all ridden on this yo-yo, up and down, and going through various phases of our addiction to food. Now, food was my first addiction. First of all, when I was a little boy, I was skinny as a rail, and my mom was worried about me. She thought something was wrong, and she was a fairly, I would say we call her a disciplinarian. She was pretty strict with me at times. And she made it clear that I was to eat everything on my plate. Now, we had these god-awful plates from the 50s that had a rooster on them. So the rule was I had to eat until I could see the rooster. And there were very often things on that plate I had no interest in. And by the way, I was also a real picky eater, too. It's really weird. By the way, the proverbial fat pictures are going around. And on the flip side is a picture that I took a few weeks ago. It's taken kind of from the top of a hilltop near our house that I can now climb on my mountain bike and enjoy the most amazing views of the ocean and enjoy nature, because today I'm literally not locked up in a room with a bag of something kind of passing out to the glow of the TV. So my life is completely different today, which I'll get into a little bit more. But basically, my mom would make me eat till the rooster. I was at the rooster thing. Okay, so back to the rooster. There was a little story that went around my family. My family would talk about how I was so stubborn that I would sit there and not eat. I wouldn't be allowed to leave the table until one night I actually fell asleep and my head flopped down in the food. And yeah, everyone thought that was real funny and real cute. But a few years later, when I got into some therapy, the therapist did not laugh and realized that, you know, the roots go deep. My parents divorced when I was very young, 3 years old, and food became a comfort for me. Because I have an addictive gene in my body, whatever that is, that addictive gene, when that substance gave me the calm and the feeling of warmth and comfort, I could not stop. I don't have a very good off button. So once I'm turned on, I'm pretty jammed on. And I can't get enough until I've had too much. And basically my MO in my disease is I will pig out till I pass out. And basically I ate alcoholically. I did all these things, you know, and I'm going to tell you tonight that I have a special guest here, my wife and my Aunt Regina. My wife is absolutely amazing, and her forgiveness and her understanding and her love for me, her unconditional love for me, absolutely blows me away. First of all, I didn't get married until I was 48. She's my only love. And we've been married for almost 10 years now. But she suffered through a lot of my overeating and was baffled, completely baffled by it. If anyone's an Al-Anon, she's a black belt in Al-Anon. I don't believe has ever been to an Al-Anon meeting. She comes by it naturally. And but basically, she at some point realized that there was nothing she could do. And she loved me anyway. And the disease was tearing us apart. Because this last time when I started approaching a very unhealthy period physically in my life. I weighed over 260 pounds, and I felt like doo-doo. Felt really, really bad. Physically, mentally, I mean, you know, psychologically, it's absolutely devastating. I was through my most of my life, I've always enjoyed cycling, bike riding, and especially when I got sober and abstinent in 1993, I really, really enjoyed cycling and went on some amazing cycling trips, and never quite gave up cycling, but it was a couple years ago when we moved in San Clemente, we moved inland a little bit, so we have to go, when we ride our bikes to the beach, one of the rules when we looked for our house was we had to be within riding distance of the beach, and we're blessed to be able to live a 12-minute bike ride from the beach, but it's all uphill back, and I could ride it, but there's this one particular hill that was a little steep, short and steep, and I was riding up this thing and just feeling, you know, oh, God, you know, barely making it in the very lowest gear, and this couple about my age comes riding by me, riding by on a bike, and they go, you know, this hill will be a lot easier if you just raise your seat a couple inches. It's like, I said, no, this hill would be a lot easier if I lost about 50 pounds. Oh, no, you'd be amazed if you just raised your seat. Come on. I mean, okay, my seat was a little low. I knew that because I was just lazy. It was a little low. They were right. But it just ticked me off because I knew why I couldn't make it up that friggin' hill. And I was embarrassed and I felt like crap and I didn't like riding too much anymore. And so... I don't know. Somewhere I decided I was going to get some help, and I came back to OA. And I walked into a meeting, and I saw a guy that looked normal. Well, no one's normally normal in these rooms. You know, we're all here because we're not all there. But he looked like he had a really happy, normal, well-adjusted life, and he worked at Steps. And he had something I wanted, and I asked, will you be my sponsor? And he accepted, and he started laying out the rules, and we started working the steps together. And I started getting really feeling a lot better. And the results were just dramatic, because I'm not naturally a heavy person, and I stopped eating compulsively. Now, some of the things I used to do, I won't be too graphic about it, because I think we all have similar stories, and you know what that is. But I basically now eat three meals a day plus a nutrition snack when needed, and I do not eat my trigger foods, the foods that I have identified as triggers. And every meal has a beginning and a middle and an end. And I also invite God to help me in my life more and more. So when all of these things started happening, you know, now I can ride that hill up at 14 miles an hour and without being too badly out of breath. And I'm looking for these people. I'm hoping every day I'm going to see them and I'm going to ride past them very fast and say, you know, if you just lowered your seat by about 2 inches. But see, that's a resentment now, isn't it? Isn't that a resentment? Maybe it's time I give up that resentment. Actually, I think I have. But let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, the first step I like to say in this program is a doozy of a step. They say it's the only step you can work perfectly at any given time. But, okay, we conceded to our innermost self that we're a compulsive overeater and our life had become unmanageable. And innermost self. How many times did we think we found our innermost self and found out the next day that we hadn't, because we obviously, it didn't seem to make an impact? Does anybody relate to that? I mean, how many bottoms are there? Every bottom seemed to have a trap door in it. You know? And that is what it was like for me. I wrote these really horrible things, but about how miserable I was. And I'll never do that again. I'll never binge again. And then next thing you know, by that evening, I'm going home through the drive-thru. And then when I come home, not hungry, and my wife prepared a nice meal, I sit and eat the meal anyway because I couldn't tell her. I just went through the drive-thru. Well, she figured it out. She figured out how much money I was spending. She told me about $600, I think, is the figure she said. About $600 a month was just flying out of our budget because I was eating ostensibly. And my wife is, we call in these rooms a normie, you know, because she has a normal attitude about food. And gosh, I'm full. Gosh, that's too rich. These are things they will say. Another thing she'll say is, I want to get this right, especially since she's here. Fruit is God's candy. Oh, God. No, candy is God's candy. No. And I didn't get that at all. But today, I have a whole new relationship with food, with healthy foods. And today I crave healthy foods. But that first step is a doozy. And one of the things I did when I worked my first step, and I try to, when I'm working with others now, I try to do this. Let's write out the consequences of our disease as graphically and as completely as we can. What are the terrible things that will surely happen as sure as the day starts and ends, as sure as this day is today? What are the things that will definitely happen if I continue compulsively overeating? And try to really visualize that and get scared. Because it wasn't until I got scared and got on my knees and asked God for help. God, please help me. Those are the magic words. God, please help me. I prayed for the willingness for so long. I prayed on my knees for the willingness to stop eating compulsively. The willingness to do the steps. That willingness, I am convinced, came from my higher power. It did not come from me. I don't do this alone. I believe that came from God. Now, I'm a recovering atheist, folks. I did not come into this program a spiritual giant, and I'm certainly not a spiritual giant today, and I can't tell you that my faith is always 100% unflappable. But that's really when I said, God, please help me. And then God put the people in my life, and I started taking the direction. So I came to believe that a power greater than myself, which at first was the group, because I didn't have a God in my life at that time. So the group was clearly, you guys, clearly were able to do something I couldn't do. So you were a power greater than myself. So for me, that was my first higher power as it transferred in. Now, they say in the big book that the purpose of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't say the purpose is to stop drinking or to stop compulsively eating or compulsively washing your hands or whatever disease you have, brain disease you have. They say the purpose of this book is to find a power greater than yourself. And that's truly what the whole book of Alcoholics Anonymous is about and what all the steps start getting you to do. They start moving you towards a higher power. And so working that second step, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I started to really believe that was possible. I saw it here through the miracles that I see every day in these rooms. And I became willing to turn my will over a little bit. Little dosages a bit at a time, you know. And one of those things I did that I really never fully did, even though I'd worked the 12 steps fully in the other program, I never really worked them fully with an OA sponsor from beginning to end, through the book, exactly the way they're written. And that's what my sponsor helped me do. So I was willing to do that now. So when you get to the fourth step, for me, I heard the fourth step when I first heard it, it sounded very scary. And I heard comprehensive, all-inclusive, massive project is what I heard in my head. But it doesn't. It just has a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. So searching and fearless, well, how do you be fearless about that? Back to the God thing. Because I learned to work the four steps in a workshop first time. And I came in and the guy said, we're going to write out all the resentments we have against all the people. Okay, so I'm going out to my car. I said, let me go get my day runner because it had all the people in there. I said, they're gonna... And he said, no, we're not going to do it that way. And we started getting into a state of prayer. And I started praying for God to reveal these resentments to me. And you know what started happening? People who were not in my day runner were starting to come up on paper. So I used that state of prayer to help me do my fourth step. And then as we worked through it, I started realizing that really I am the cause of my problems and that my expectations of others are what really causes me to be angry. And that anger that I feel towards other people, when I allow myself, they say it's that resentments are the dubious luxury of the normal eater. Well, they say like taking, harboring a resentment is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. You know? And that really is. I mean, it's like, but it doesn't work. It's you. And it's half the time they don't even know that you're mad at them, you know? So it's so ridiculous. Or they don't even care. Even if they do know, they don't care. So it's really all about here and with God and learning the resentment prayer that they suggest in the Big Book and to start releasing myself from these resentments because the resentments are the number one offender and they will bring us back every time. So, and then as I start facing my own character defects, oh gosh, I pray every day for help with that. And I have many. For a complete alphabetized list, I'm sure my wife would give you one at the end of the week. But quite honestly, I pray for many of my shortcomings all the time. And you know, where I'm at today, in my life today, I could not be here doing the things I'm doing today if I was still eating compulsively. And first of all, I probably would have had my heart attack or my stroke. Or whatever. But God seems to give us what we can handle. Somebody said to me, I love you. By the way, have you noticed I like catchphrases? You know, I got a million of them, and I love them. But somebody said, God will never let you fall further than your knees. But they say, God didn't bring you to this point to let you fail. Well, sometimes I think he does. I think he's got a really weird sense of humor, and sometimes I don't think he cares. And I have a lot of trouble, by the way, personally. This is my personal thing. I have a lot of trouble relating to God as someone who's following me closely, knows me, and loves me, and wants the best for me, and will always do the best for me. Sometimes I do see God as somewhat random, and there's a bigger picture there, but that's kind of philosophical. But hey, I do know something. I do know if I pray, I get power. And that I do know from experience, it really works. And if you don't think it works, just try it. Just try it and try it and try it until it starts working. And when it starts working, then you'll start believing in that. But I'm in a place now in my career where my career, we went into the recession a couple years ago, as you know, and they were laying off people. I've been in my business for a long time. I'm in the convention and trade show business. And they were laying off hundreds of people because when the economy started to tank, all these budgets were disappearing. And I was in no shape to compete with people who were fit. Because not just physically, but mentally, I wasn't fit. And I started getting to the point where I started picking up some new... I was a national sales manager where I had to go travel a lot. And, you know, I could not handle the pace and the workload that I have today I would not have had the mental acuity or the physical ability to do what I have done in the last 2 years. I would not have been able to do that when I was still compulsively overeating. So God helped me right in the nick of time. And so now I'm even have greater challenges at work, and going into an incredibly massive workload. And I'm learning one step at a time to be a better time organizer and a better manager and a better worker. Learning to take my ADD dyslexic brain and try to learn to focus it. And where do I go for that power? I pray now, like not sometimes hourly, but every like 2 or 3 minutes. And it's been helping me a lot. And let's hope I get through the next few months, which is going to be a very challenging time for me. But it's also exciting, and I'm learning that, you know what, it's okay. I just do my best, and God will take care of the rest. You see, God does what we can't do. God does the miracles in life. You know, everything here is a miracle. Life is a miracle when you think about it. We live on a planet whirling around in a vacuum that's immense. And there's we're in the only little livable slice of oxygen, this little sliver of oxygen. And everything is here, and our food is here. Our bodies are miraculous machines. And we have love, and people help each other. And, I mean, just, this is no explanation for the miracle of life. It's just mind-boggling what a miracle life is. And whoops, my ADD brain just went, what was my point? Well, anyway, life is a miracle. So, segue. What was I going to say? They edit these tapes, right? Okay, well, I guess I'll just plunder on. I had a point. I just totally lost it. I apologize. So today I enjoy the abstinence and the clarity that I get from my abstinence. I'm doing many exciting things in my life today that I could not have done before. And these are a gift of the program. But probably, there's no question, the best gift is that I'm not isolating anymore, and I'm getting back closer with my wife. And you know, this is a selfish disease. When I was out there compulsively overeating, you know, they say selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our problems, because it really, truly is a selfish disease. And I am out there trying to make myself happy by going through the 360-degree drive-thru that just never stops. You know, that was putting my family's livelihood in danger. And now I have a grandson and a granddaughter that look up to me and that love me, and I get to spend time with, and I can pick them up and play around with them, and they don't wear me down too much. And, you know, I mean, what a gift that is. That's just an incredible gift for this guy, you know. So then the final frontier, really, in the 12 steps is to be able to start working with others. And that really happens when you get here as a newcomer. You know, the newcomers will start huddling up and talking to each other and trying to figure things out together, and you start going out to meetings, and, you know, next thing you know, you're not quite as much of a newcomer as the next newcomer is, and you can help that person out. So we're all working on that right away. But then once you start getting into the point where somebody is asking you to sponsor, that is an awesome responsibility, because it's truly a life or death thing. If we don't recover, we're surely going to die. And if you don't believe that, then... door's right there. And this is a life or death situation. And working with others has been really, really bowled me over that today I can work with some people that now call me sponsor, and I've got some amazing miracles happening in my life. And these people are just absolutely making me feel great, you know, also reminding me that I'm one compulsive bite. I'm one tubby tot away from another binge that could last years. So, I've also developed some wonderful friendships in these rooms. I speak on a daily basis to my friends in the morning. We set goals. I have one person I talk to usually about 6:30 in the morning, and we make commitments to each other. Today I'm committed to do this, okay, and today I commit to do this, and we keep that in mind, and it's a very, very helpful thing. Today I have a whole different relationship with food and my meal plan. My new abstinent date is February 12th, 2010. So I'm coming up on a milestone, one day at a time, and if the hostess Twinkie truck doesn't drive me over. What I've been doing is I've been writing my food down every day. So I hold myself accountable, and, I don't eat the trigger foods, of course, but I travel a lot. And when I travel, I've come up with all kinds of techniques and things that really are helpful to keep me abstinent and not eating compulsively. And I'm able to share those tools with my friends in OA, and it's helping them a lot. Helps me a lot to share that and remember that that is the core of my physical recovery. And spiritually, that's really my spiritual fitness is what is going to be able to keep me here. Is when I was compulsively eating, I was cutting myself off from God. Really, I was numbing my brain out, and I try to look at God as my beacon now. He's like a navigation beacon, and when I start flying astray, I'll just tune back in and get back on that beacon. Because God is good. God is goodness. God is love. That's where I want to go. And when I see myself doing something that I don't think is quite good or quite loving, then I want to come back onto that beacon. And I use this program and the people in these rooms to help me do that. And today, my life is incredible. Well, we were walking all over the Huntington. Anybody been to the Huntington Library and Botanical Gardens? You know, 207 acres out there. And we're walking around there, and I don't feel tired. And I'm out there enjoying it. My wife is an incredibly talented artist and sculptor, and one of her sculptures is now in the garden. And I'm so proud of her. It's just, to be part of this, you know, completely amazes me. Be out there with our grandson and be able to enjoy the day. I believe that part of my abstinence, it needs to be physical activity, and I don't like the word exercise because exercise is boring, so find something you like to do. I had one friend, I said, hey, why don't you like Disneyland, get an annual pass. Walk around there. There's abstinent things you can do. You can bring your own food in. Walk around Disneyland. That's, you know, you have a great time. Walking, whatever it is, you got to be physically active. I get it about 50-minute bike ride every day I can. Sometimes, a little bit less or not at all when I travel, you know, it's harder, and I go to the gyms and stuff, but that physical activity, I call it nature's Prozac. And it's and it's true, because when you exercise, your brain chemistry improves, and the doctors will tell you that. So I believe that getting some sort of physical activity, something fun, something you enjoy, and that's where God is. He's not, you know, he's in here too. He's in all of us, but God is out there, and that world is amazing. And you guys can if you're not seeing it now, there's a miracle everywhere you look. Everything's a miracle. So I hope that you have someone here in this room you can pick as a sponsor who will help you, guide you through the steps to help you recover from this seemingly hopeless disease and be able to enjoy life again. And so that you can take a birthday chip like these two ladies here. And believe me, it's a lot better than being out there. Thank you for letting me share. Oh, briefly describe my evolution of my higher power. Well, my first higher power, there I didn't have one. Of course, I was an atheist, agnostic, I would say, just to be politically correct. And what happened is the group was a power greater than myself. Now, I've heard people say, oh, make it a doorknob. I mean, you know, it does sound ridiculous. You know, whoever heard of a doorknob as your higher power? Well, that's totally ridiculous. Then the power started going into, a friend of mine said to me, we were talking about God, and I said, well, what is God? Where is God? He goes, well, do you see that wave crashing? I go, yeah, that's God. Do you see that tree growing? That's God. Can you explain the love? Why people do loving things, selfish, unselfish things? That's love, that's God. Okay, so that's God. God is good with an extra O, God, G-O-O-D. So these are the ideas that are... So I see God as like a power, an energy, a force that I can connect with because I was created by this power. And I believe, probably shouldn't say this, but I believe that religion is a way of getting a handle on God, and I believe all the religions can be very good. So we don't, in this, our concept of God in this program is roomy and all-inclusive. That's what they say in the big book, but I don't believe, you know, necessarily, but I am finding that religious ideas can help you also. So I encourage people to try that. Does that help? Great. Okay, great. The resentment prayer, I'll paraphrase, basically, I pray for the person I have the resentment for. So let's say it's somebody who fired me. I would say, would you please pray for this ignorant, poor person? No. would you please, this person is sick. Somebody who's done me harm. That's probably a bad example, but somebody who's done me harm. I will pray for this person as a sick friend, and can you help this person? And can you take this resentment away from me? Help me not feel it. And you say that prayer over and over again with their name in it until it goes away, until the resentment goes away. And it's in there. It's in the book. And then the other thing you asked about, how I pray on my knees because I believe that it's important to humble myself to a power greater than myself. Remember, I'm not the power greater than myself. And I always start with the third step prayer. And I also pray for other people, and I pray for acceptance, and I pray for to do the right thing in His will, and I occasionally pray for results, but I don't think that. See, I'm not in the results business. God is, and God knows. If I got everything I wanted when I came to this program and I prayed for, I would have been sold short. See, God gave me things I never even imagined, so I pray for His will. You're welcome. Thank you.